Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, we're holding in the middle of Perek Nun Beis, going through the seven wonders of the world. Last week we did the first five. This week we'll finish off with the last two, and then we'll go. Rabbi Leo Meizmer has a little bit of a summary where he goes through all seven of them and tries to bring out some more general ideas, and then we'll go through that afterwards. Okay, so the sixth wonder is talking about. It refers to a story in Sefer Yeshua. When the first three places that Yeshua conquered when they came into Eretz Yisrael after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu were Yericho, then Ai, and then Givon. The story with the Givon is that the Givonites were a Canaanite people who pretended to be foreigners, and Yeshua made a peace treaty with them. And then afterwards, all the Canaanim decided that they're going to go fight the Givonim. And then Yeshua, who was bound by a peace treaty with the Givonites, so he was bound to by that peace treaty to defend them. So he got involved in that war, and then he fought a lot of the Canaanite nations that went to fight the Givonim. So this is the war of Yeshua at Givon. So the Medrash says like this: Leifes Shishi, the sixth wonder is Miyam Shenivru Ushamayim Va'aretz, from the day that the heavens and the earth were created, Hayareach Va'Hakolichavim Va'Mazolos Edlin Lahayir Alaretz. The moon and the stars and the constellations, they come up to give light to the land. And they don't fight with each other. They never fought with each other. Everything was always peaceful, and it went in a certain order. And there was a certain order that it went, and it didn't deviate from that norm. Until Yeshua came along, and he was making a war for the Jews. Ve'erev Shabbos ha'isa, and it was Erev Shabbos. V'ra'a Yeshua b'tzarasin shel Yisrael. Yeshua saw the pain of the Jews, sh'leichalos ha'Shabbos, so that they won't desecrate the Shabbos. Meaning, it was Erev Shabbos, and they're fighting this war, and Yeshua didn't want the war to continue, that they would end up defiling the Shabbos. You have to know exactly what the problem is, because we found other wars where they'd fought even on Shabbos. So like, what exactly were they what was bothering them? Was it Tzaras and Shal Yisrael that they don't want to be Mechal Shabbos? We'll see in a few moments. Void, and furthermore, Shura Chartumim Ho Emorim, he saw that the Amorite Chartumim, the Amorite necromancers, were Kovshin Bamazolis, Boim Al Yisrael. They were, the gears we have is Kovshin, they would capture the constellations to send them out against Klal Yisrael. Another gersa is they would chayvshim or raygshim. Raygshim is they would feel the mazalas to send them off against Klal Yisrael. Or chayvshim is they would like capture them in order to use the constellations of the zodiac against Klal Yisrael. Which the Mefarshim explained means that they were doing different types of witchcraft or kishuf based on the mazalas in order to be matzliach in their war. Right. So there's two things that were happening over here. One thing is that it was Erev Shabbos, and the sun was going down, and Yeshua didn't want that they would have to end up fighting on Shabbos. And the second one is that the Goyim, the Canaanim, were using the mazalos in order to ensure their victory through witchcraft or whatever. So me'asa Yeshua, what did Yeshua do? Poshet yadoi le'or ha'shemesh le'or yirbech le'or ha'kechavim. He stretched out his hand to the light of the sun and the light of the moon and the light of the stars. V'hizkar aleihem es Hashem, and he mentioned the name of Hashem. He invoked the name of Hashem. Right? And the lashon of the pasuk is that Yeshua said, "Shemesh begivoin doim v'yareach be'emek ayalon." Right? He said, "Shemesh begivoin doim." The sun should be quiet in the Givon and the moon in the valley of Ayalon. Right? Doim literally means be quiet. The Chazal tell us what happened was that Yeshua was saying that the sun should stop moving. It should stop its movement going downward because it was going to be Shabbos. Yeshua said, no, sun, stay in place. Be doim. Doim literally means be quiet. It doesn't mean stand doesn't mean stand still, but it means to be still, like still in German or Yiddish means to be quiet. Right? So Chazal tell us that the idea is that every element of creation, when it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, is part of the bigger picture. That is considered like they're singing songs of Hashem's praise. So the son said, I can't stop in my tracks, because then that song that comes out, that covet of Hashem that comes out from the movement of the son won't be said. So Yeshua said, look, you stand in your place and I'll sing instead of you. That's what Chazal tell us. So Yeshua said to the son, stop. And all of them stood at a standstill for 36 hours until Motzei Shabbos. Meaning, the sun, the moon, the constellations, they all stood still for 36 hours. It was Erev Shabbos, so the sun was going down, and then the sun stopped, and it didn't go down for 36 hours until the time that would otherwise be Erev Shabbos. And the Pasuk just says, Shemesh begivin doim v'yirech be'emek ayalon, which is the sun and the moon. But the Medrash over here is saying that it's also talking about the stars and whatever, even though it's not explicit in the Pasuk. Shema, it says in the Pasuk, v'yidoim ha'shemesh yirech omad ad yikim goya yivov, until Yeshua fought them and defeated them. Uchsiv, and the Pasuk says, v'loi hoya kayem ha'hu lufana v'achrav l'shmoya ha'shem b'koil ish. It never happened before and afterwards. It never happened before or afterwards that Hashem listened to the voice of a man in order to do such a thing. Vishamu malchei ha'aretz, and the kings of the land heard about this. Vishamu, and they wondered about it. Shelo haya chamayu miyam shenivra ha'olam, because there was never such a thing since the day the world was created. Shenema v'lo haya bayam kayemahu. It never happened like that day. Right? Okay. So there's a few different issues that I want to talk about over here. Right? First of all, the what was the problem? Right? The problem was, we said it was twofold. Why did Yeshua have to make the sun stand in place? One problem is because it was Erev Shabbos and the sun was going down and it was going to be Shabbos, and Yeshua didn't want them to be Mechal Shabbos. The other problem was that they did Kishuv. So the idea of Kishuv, the Mepharshim explained that the whole concept of certain types of kishuf are dependent on the movement of the stars and the suns and the constellations or whatever. So then if you stop that movement, you can sort of throw them off track, and then they won't be able to use those powers. They weren't tapping into those powers. But what was the problem with the Shabbos that was going? What was the Erev Shabbos? Chazal tell us that by Yericho, so they surrounded the city every day for 7 days, and on the seventh day they went and they conquered the city of Yericho. They fought and they defeated Yericho, right? The wall fell down, etc. And that Chazal tells us that the seventh day when they fought for Yericho, that was Shabbos. So you see that you are allowed to fight a war on Shabbos. So what was Yeshua's problem over here? By Givon, that he didn't want that they should have to end up fighting on Shabbos. What was the problem? So the Marsha in Mesachas Avodah Zarah, in the beginning of the second parak, says two answers. It says, first of all, you could say that over here it's different. Because by Yericho, the whole point of the war was to fight against Canaanim in order to conquer Eretz Yisrael. It was a Mechametz Mitzvah, it was trying to conquer part of Eretz Yisrael. Masha Einkein, on the other hand, over here, by Givon, the war wasn't an offensive war to try to conquer part of Eretz Yisrael. It was more of a defensive war. The Givonites, who made a peace treaty with the Jews, were under attack, so the Jews had to go defend them. But it wasn't a Kibush Eretz Yisrael type of war. It was a defensive war to help out the allies. So in that type of war, Yeshua wasn't comfortable, the Jews weren't comfortable fighting such a war on Shabbos, so Yeshua had to make a nace that the sun would stand still and Shabbos wouldn't come. The second answer the Marsha says is that, no, you're never supposed to fight a war on Shabbos. Even in Mechametz Mitzvah, it sounds like. So what about Yericho? So he brings from the Yerushalmi, the Gemara Yerushalmi says that even Yericho was a Hiras Shah. Right? There's a concept that a prophet is allowed to temporarily suspend a mitzvah or an isra in the Torah according to his prophetic insight. So Chazal tell us that the Yerushalmi says that when Klal Yisrael fought for Yericho on Shabbos, that was a Hiras Shah. It was only a temporary suspension of a dispensation that they were allowed to fight on Shabbos. What?
That was a Melchemes Roshustin.
No, I think the understanding is that even a Melchemes Mitzvah is not Doicha Shabbos.
It's not Doicha Shabbos?
That's what it seems.
Forget, we weren't in the Rambam.
No, it could be right. I don't know. It could be totally into Tirutzim over here.
There's a Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to desecrate Shabbos, even if you, even if the enemy just comes in a border town. To
no, that's different. That's different because that's pikuach nefesh. That's because otherwise people will die. But to stam go out and lechatchila start a war.
Pikuach nefesh is considered a mechames mitzvah.
Felder, I don't know if you're going to get up there. There's a rumble.
No, could be right. I don't know. Even if the Rambam says that,
with your permission,
Rabbi Feld, even if the Rambam says that, it could be it's totally in these two answers of Marashal. The first answer of Marashal will go like the Rambam. The second answer doesn't go like the Rambam. There's another answer. What was going on over here? The Zayas Ranan says that in Achinami, the main point that was bothering them wasn't the fact that they would end up fighting on Shabbos, like Rabbi Felder is saying, and like the first answer of the Marashah, they really technically would be allowed to fight on Shabbos. It's not so much of a problem. What is the first answer of Marashah.
What is the Isser?
What would be the Isser?
Fighting on Shabbos. Well, just assuming. But what is the
actual... let's say the Tilas Neshama.
The Tilas Neshama?
Yeah, let's say.
I didn't know that they actually fought. I know they blew horns.
Okay.
That was like maybe step one.
Yeah.
And then I would answer they ate their sudas, then they blew their horns, then they got in Mariv.
And the walls fell down.
They went to kill.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But nobody, Marashah is asking the questions.
Yeah, the Marashah asks. So the Zayis Ranan, which is the Magen Avraham's Pirush on the Yalkut Shemayni, so the Zayis Ranan says a different approach. He says that no, there wasn't a problem of doing war on Shabbos. That didn't bother them. Maybe like Rabbi Felder is saying that it's Mechamas Mitzvah, so it's maybe Mechamas Mitzvah is Mutar on Shabbos, it's not a problem. Right? So what was bothering them? The Iker thing that was bothering them was that the Canaanim did some sort of Kishuf or whatever using the stars and the moon, the suns and the moon, the sun and the moon and the stars.
So now, Yoyi Shogoyim Shloshi Yom Kodom Shabbos, Vosin Mam Milchoma Bechol Yom Vyoma Vafilu Vashabbos, Shinemar Adud Zom.
Yeah, so the Rambam seems to explicitly say that Mechamas Mitzvah, even Mechamas Rishus, you do on Shabbos. So as the Zayis Ranan is saying, that didn't bother them. Doing war on Shabbos didn't bother them. What bothered them was the Kishuf. But once we're going to do something to get rid of their Kishuf, we can also do something that'll, you know, get rid of the problem of Shabbos, so that even if it feels wrong, even if it's halachically, technically mutter, it might feel a little bit wrong, so then, you know, that it wouldn't even bother anybody, because it's not even Shabbos b'chol. So it's sort of like, the way Zayis Ranan is saying in a nutshell, is like, by stopping the sun, Yeshua is accomplishing killing two birds with one stone.
But not on Shabbos.
Right, not on Shabbos, because then it's the close to Shabbos. That's one point over here. The second point is like this. At the end, the Medrash said that there was never such a thing like this beforehand, from the days that the heavens and the earth was created, there was never such a thing like this that the sun stopped. Yeah? Is that true? That the sun stopped and there was light for 36 hours? There was such a thing like that before. Well, there's two questions you could ask. And the Mefarshim asked this. First of all, we've spoken about before in Perek Chaf that when Hashem originally created the world, so the sun was there for 12 hours, Erev Shabbos, and it was still light the entire Shabbos, and then only after Shabbos did the sun go down, and then Adam Rishon saw that it was dark and he got scared or whatever. Right? The original light functioned for 36 hours consecutively in the time of Bria Salam. So how can we come and say, oh, there was never such a thing since the creation of the world? What do you mean? By the creation of the world, there was 36 hours of light consecutively. That's one question. The second question is that...
No, sorry, I didn't get that. The sun came day four.
What? Sun came day four, right?
But no, night, it was invented.
Yeah.
The moon the moon was out first, then the sun came.
No, we're not talking about day four. We're talking about the sixth day of creation, Friday.
Yeah, 6 a.m. Friday morning.
6 a.m. Friday morning, the sun came up, like every morning.
Yeah.
Right? That was the day that Adam Rishon was created.
Yes.
And then Adam Rishon ate for the Ezadas, whatever, all on that day. Right? And then Shabbos came along.
Yes.
But we said earlier in Perek Chaf that for Shabbos, that's like Friday night, the sun didn't go down. The sun didn't go down, but it was still light the whole Friday night. the whole Shabbos. The Mitzvah Shabbos, it got dark, and then Adam Rishon was scared because he thought he was getting his Einish from the sin of the Eitz Hadas. We spoke about this in Perek Chof.
Nevertheless,
so it comes out as, yeah. You're hitting on a good point, but we'll get to that in a moment. But what comes out is that over there was 36 hours of sunlight, right? The whole Friday day plus 24 hours of Shabbos is 12 plus 24 is 36, right? So what do you do with that? That's the same thing as over here. One question. Second question is like this. Not only did Yeshua make the sun stand still, but Chazal tell us that when Moshe Rabbeinu was fighting Sichon, he also made the sun stand still. Chazal tell us this. Okay. Because Yeshua, is sort of as a Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, is not going to be doing things that Moshe Rabbeinu himself didn't do. So it had to be that, even though it's not explicitly in the Pesukim, that Moshe Rabbeinu made the sun stand still, but since Yeshua did it, we can assume that Moshe Rabbeinu also did it. It's sort of, in a Chachamim, in a way, it's sort of backwards logic, but that's what Chazal tell us. So the question is, well, if Moshe Rabbeinu did it, as Chazal tell us elsewhere, so then what's the Chiddush saying here? Oh, when Yeshua did it, what was the Lashon of the Pasuk? Lo yihaya kayem ha'hu lifanov v'acharov. Never was something like that before, afterwards. What do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu did the same thing. Okay. So the Yaibitz, in the Hagoyes Yaibitz over here on Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the Yaibitz asks both of these questions, and like this. The first question he asks from Bris Olam, the 36 hours, and he answers that no, the point over here wasn't that Stam Yeshua made the sun stand for 36 hours straight. No, that wasn't the point. The point was Loi Haya. What's the lashon in the pasuk? Loi Haya Kayem Ahulu Fun of Acharov. To do what? Lishmoy Hashem b'kol ish. That Hashem would listen to the voice of man. The Chiddush was that a person asked Hashem to make the sun stand still, and Hashem made the sun stand still. By Brias Olam, it wasn't that someone asked Hashem to do it. Hashem did it on his own. That was what came out. But it wasn't that Hashem asked someone to do it. That someone asked Hashem to do it. What? Oh, so what about with Moshe? So there the Yaibitz asks, what about with Moshe? And then he says that maybe by Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't such a big nace, because here it was 36 hours, and over there maybe it was less than that. So it was only like 10 minutes or whatever, something like that. And then it wasn't such a big nace that you would compare it. So that's why we focused on the nace of Yeshua, not focused on the nace of Moshe Rabbeinu. And basically, yeah, basically the Radal sort of says like the first answer of the Yaibitz, that the focus is on Lishmoy Hashem B'Korl Ish. The Zayis Ranan asks, let's say like this. The Marzu says that you can make a difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yeshua. Moshe Rabbeinu could be only made the sun stand still, while Yeshua, he made the sun, the moon, and all the stars as well. So that's the Marzu's answer, that there's a difference. Chazal only said it about Moshe making the sun stand still. Chazal didn't say. We don't know. I didn't see any sources that say exactly how long.
Did it sink for the sun also then?
Could be.
And then, yeah, the question is, why did Yeshua have to make the sun stand still? He just didn't want the mezalos, the kochavim, to be there.
No, it could be that all the kishuf things are. It's based on like the whole system, the whole astrological system
so
together.
The sun is our strength, lachara. He took away their power. He didn't give us any extra power by making it time of the sun. He just sort of
Okay. Rabbi Leomi Isver says that the difference between Moshe and Yeshua is that when Moshe Rabbeinu made the sun stand still, it wasn't as well known. So we're talking about the seven wonders of the world, things that were well known amongst everyone. So we're not going to mention what Moshe Rabbeinu did, even though he did the same thing as Yeshua, because it wasn't as well known as what Yeshua did. Because Yeshua did it like mamish out in the open. He was fighting 31 Canaanite kings in the context of a greater war against Canaan. So it was more well known what happened than by what Moshe Rabbeinu did. The Zayis Ranan says another answer to the question we're saying about Bris Olam. The Zayis Ranan wants to say that there's a difference between what happened over here and what happened by Bris Olam. What happened over here was that the sun stood still, and because the sun stood still, it was light for 36 hours straight. By Bria Sa'ilam, the Zayis Ranan wants to say Chiddush, that what happened over there was that no, the sun went down like normal. By Friday after Friday evening of Riyas HaOlam, the sun went down like normal. So why was it still light? That was the extension of the light that Hashem created for, you know, Shiva Simei Bereishis, the light that Hashem created on the first day of Bereishis. So that light stood through Friday day and through Shabbos, and that's what we mean that the light was there for 36 hours consecutively. But the sun went down Friday night, came back up Shabbos morning.
The sun had to go down because otherwise it wouldn't be Shabbos.
The sun had to have gone down because otherwise it wouldn't be Shabbos. Like Rabbi Pomerantz was sort of saying before, like you're saying now. And it's evident like that from our Medrash itself, because our Medrash itself is saying that when Shabbos comes and when Shabbos doesn't come is dependent on whether the sun came down or didn't come down. In fact, the Radal wants to even extend this. I wasn't going to speak about this, but once we're getting onto that topic, the Radal wants to extend this to halacha lamaisa. What would be the halacha if you live in the North Pole, right? And the sun only goes down how often in the summer?
Not at all
in the summer, right? So the summer. So and how often in winter? Not at all.
It never comes up,
right? So how often are you going to have 7 days? You're not really going to have 7 days. So when do you keep Shabbos in the North Pole? So some people will tell you, well, it's dependent on 24 hours. It doesn't matter if the sun comes up or sun comes down. But the Radal says, well, from our Medrash, it sounds like Shabbos is dependent on when the sun comes up and the sun comes down. But then he wants to make a chiluk because he says that our Medrash is talking about the sun standing still for the entire world. When Yeshua made it stand still, it was that sun that stood still. When you're in the North Pole, just because the sun doesn't come up or doesn't come down, that doesn't mean that it's not really coming up or coming down. It just means you don't see it because of the because of where you are. But it doesn't mean that something happened to the sun. So he says it could be it's a different thing. Okay, that's the second point that I wanted to discuss over here. And the third point is like this. I got a very interesting email this week. There's an academic journal called Beit Mikra, some Israeli academics. And in the new Beit Mikra that came out this week, there's an article from a professor in Ben-Gurion University in Be'er Sheva.
Is it a right-wing, left-wing? I gotta know who it is first.
I don't know. Ben-Gurion University.
I don't know who it is first.
Listen to this. Ben-Gurion University in Be'er Sheva. I forgot, I didn't write down the name of the guy who wrote this. But he said he discovered the date that Yeshua made the son of the story of Yeshua. Yeah, he discovered the date of the story of Yeshua. Okay, so what does he say? He says like this. When it says Shemesh Begivain Daim, he completely botches the understanding of Shemesh Begivain Daim. And he wants to say Daim doesn't mean quiet or still, but Daim means dark. So he understands that Shemesh Begivain Daim means that the sun became dark. And he says that's talking about a solar eclipse. Then he says, okay, so when did the Jews come into Canaan? He says, we're not sure. But it happened sometime between 1500 BCE and 1000 BCE. Yep. 1500 BCE goes backwards, right?
There's only one solar eclipse.
They believe that.
Well, they what?
They believe that, the academics?
Torah was written, maybe, no, maybe they're saying Imtim Salema that it happened, this is when it would have happened, or something like that. I don't know. But the Jews came into the canon between 1500 BCE and 1000 BCE. And the only time that there was a solar eclipse in Eretz Yisrael in those 500 years was on October 30th in the year 1207 BCE. So this professor writes that he figured out the date of the story of Yeshua was October 30th, 1207 BCE, and that's when it happened. That's what he wants to say. So first of all, he's off because he's saying that it was a solar eclipse, and when Chazal are telling us, and it's really evident like that from the Psukim, that it says, Vayidem HaShemesh V'Yirech Omad, it's talking about the sun standing still. It's not talking about the sun being blocked by the moon. A solar eclipse is where the sun is blocked by the moon. Right? So what does that have to do with what we're talking about, Bukha? How does that help him with the war if the sun is blocked by the moon? It doesn't, no shaykhas. That's one point. The second point is that another point where he's wrong is that Chazal actually tell us when it happened.
Yeah.
Chazal tell us exact date of this story. Seder Olam Rabbah, Perek Yud Aleph.
Who are those rabbis to tell us when it happened?
It could be. Stomach. Perek Yud Aleph.
What about a priest or imam? He would have believed it right away. If it's a rabbi, and I don't believe it.
Yeah. Perek Seder Olam Rabbah, Perek Yud Aleph. It says that what was the day of Shemesh Begila in Daim was Gimel Tammuz. What's Gimel Tammuz? Gimel Tammuz is a very chosh of a day. It's the yard site of Rav Shneur Kotler, the yard site of the Shemir Shabbos Kol Chosay. Anyone else?
Few other people.
What?
Few other people.
Few other people. Gimel Tammuz. What?
The Rambam was last week.
The Rambam was last week.
No, not in October, though, that's for sure.
It was not October, right? Gimel Tammuz is not in October.
It was somewhere near what? June, you know?
Yes.
It had to be around June,
you know? Right, something like in June time. So that's what Chazal tells us in Seder Olam, that it was Gimel Tammuz. It wasn't on the 30th of October in the year 1207 BCE.
Yeah, I have a 5,000 year calendar over there. We can look up the Hebrew date.
We also have to, you have to account for Gregorian calendar and the,
so you have to contact,
the whatever the...
What you should do is you contact this professor in Beit Mekan, tell him that
Julian
you,
calendar.
Tell him that you're a priest. Don't tell me Jewish. You're a priest. And I found the exact date.
And you found it in Seder.
Don't tell me Jewish. If you tell me Jewish, he's not going to believe me.
Yeah.
I'm a priest. Oh, really? Yeah, that must be. That's why this professor is
not a priest.
No, I'm saying these professors, that they hate everything that it has to do with the Jewish religion, but they love any other religion as long as it's not Jewish.
I understand.
So if you tell them that it's Buddhism,
I've forgotten it. Meaning that much of Shabbos is going to be Erev Shabbos at the end of 32
Tammuz. You tell them Christianity, Islam, and Buddhism.
What does that mean?
What?
Right away,
Shoshim B'Shei Sha'ot.
If you tell them it's Judaism,
until what should be Motzei Shabbos?
What should be Motzei Shabbos? Do you want to touch it?
You're getting onto a good point. Hold that thought for a second.
Shabbos, he prevented Shabbos. He kept Shabbos from coming.
Ask me this question in a minute and a half.
So Gimel Tammuz, okay? Give me a watch. So Friday night, because Gimel Tammuz can't fall out of the Shabbos.
Okay, yeah. In a minute and a half, ask that question again.
Are you
again.
Sure? Yes.
The Mefarshim are bothered like this.
I remember that happening.
Listen to this. Beautiful kasha. The Radal asks kasha. And the Yaibitz in Seder Olam asked this question. Yep. How could you say that this story happened on Gimel Tammuz and our Medrash says that it was Erev Shabbos? I can prove to you that in that year, Gimel Tammuz was not on Erev Shabbos. Okay, it's going to be more than a minute and a half. But I can prove it to you. How do you know? Because the story of Yericho, we said they went around 7 days on Yericho, and then the seventh day it fell, and that was Shabbos. Now, Medrash tells us exactly what day it was. Chaf Beis Nisan, in the month after Moshe Rabbeinu died, that's when they started going around Yericho. Chaf Ches Nisan, on the 28th of Nisan, was when Yericho fell, right? And that was Shabbos.
That's
now,
Chol HaMoed.
Chol HaMoed.
Chaf Ches is not. Chaf Ches is after.
That was the Chol HaMoed, right?
They started during Chol HaMoed.
They started Chol HaMoed, yeah. Why not?
So not allowed. So Malacha is not
so
allowed.
So the question is like this. If Chaf Ches Nisan is Shabbos, yeah, that means that the first of Nisan is on a Sunday, right? Because Chaf Ches is four. Chaf Ches means the 28th of Nisan, which is four complete weeks. Meaning, if the month started on Sunday, you have four complete weeks on the Shabbos.
So that right? Year, then Gimel Tammuz was Sunday.
Oh, so one second. Yeah, right, exactly. Well, you managed Cheshbon very quickly.
Yikes. I'm scared.
You're right. Let me build up the cheshbon. Right? If the first of Nisan is on a...
I don't understand this moment.
One second.
It's been a minute and a half.
If the first of Nisan is on a Sunday, yeah, then the first of Iyar is going to be on... Rosh Chodesh Iyar is going to be Monday, Tuesday. Because Nisan always has 30 days. Right? So Rosh Chodesh Iyar is going to be Monday, Tuesday. Rosh Chodesh Sivan is going to be Wednesday, because Iyar has 29 days, so Rosh Chodesh Sivan is going to be one day Rosh Chodesh, so it's going to be Tuesday. Then Wednesday, Rosh Chodesh Sivan is going to be Wednesday, and then Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, since Sivan always has 30 days, Rosh Chodesh Tammuz will be Thursday, Friday. Right? Now, if the second day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz is Friday, it means Aleph Tammuz is Friday, Beis Tammuz is Shabbos, Gimel Tammuz is Sunday, like Rabbi Hochstad said in like 3 seconds. Right? So it comes out that Gimel Tammuz should be on a Sunday. Our Medrash says that it was on a Friday. So that's the Radal's question, and the Ibitz's question. And they both answer, that's Machlokes Midrashim.
That's 2 days. A difference?
3 days. One second. So they answer it's Machlokes Midrashim. Now, you could answer that the Gimel Tammuz is on a Sunday, meaning after what happened with the day that never happened? The sun stood still for 24 hours. That day never happened. Maybe when the Medrash says that the war was on Gimel Tammuz, it's referring to the Sunday, the end of the war, when the sun finally, let's say, went down afterwards, which is going to be like what should technically be Sunday. Maybe it's referring to Sunday. Our Medrash is talking about the Friday. That Medrash is talking about the Sunday. And it's not a stira. That's one thing. The second thing is that the calculation of this of the kasha assumes that you're going to have two, between Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, till Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, you're going to have 2 months that are 30 days and 1 month that's 29 days. Right? Who says that it worked like that? Maybe you'll have...
If they're all 29 at that time.
That's it. Let's say first, maybe one of them is going to be 29. One of them is going to be 29, two of them are going to be 29, and one of them is going to be 30, right? So that would move Gimel Tammuz to Shabbos. And then maybe Gimel Tammuz Shabbos is referring to that Shabbos that was supposed to be. That the sun was supposed to, if it would have went down, it would have been Gimel Tammuz. Maybe that's what's happening. Or, like you just proposed, if they did Kiddush HaChodesh through people seeing the moon, so then maybe all of them was 29 days. All 3 months were 29 days. Right. And that would move Rosh that would move Gimel Tammuz to Friday. Right? You'd have Rosh Chodesh Nisan Sunday, Rosh Chodesh Iyar Monday, Rosh Chodesh Sivan Tuesday, Rosh Chodesh Tammuz Wednesday, then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Friday is Gimel Tammuz, then it's not a kasha. Okay. So I'm not sure which approach is the best approach for this question. There's another point over there. I don't want to be marach about this, but this is what the Medrash says over there in the Seder Olam. It says that, and it was the day of Rabbi Yosi, the Lashon, Rabbi Yosi Omer Yom HaTkufa Haya. It was the day of the Tkufa. Rabbi Yosi says it was the day of the Tkufa. It was the summer solstice. That's not necessarily Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. It was the day of the summer solstice.
But according to it is Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. Tkufa is a big machloch amongst the Tammuz, isn't it?
So the some people want to say that, the pashtus is that Rabbi Yosi is saying that Gimel Tammuz of that year was the day of the summer solstice. That's what it seems to be saying. There's a sefer called Seder Zmanim on Seder Olam, and he wants to say that no, Rabbi Yosi is arguing on what we would call, the Tana Kama. The Tana Kama says that it happened on Gimel Tammuz. Rabbi Yosi says no, it didn't happen on Gimel Tammuz. It happened on the day of the summer solstice, the day of the longest day of the year. So not only did the academics say that it was an eclipse, and the sun was, the sun was taken out, but no, Chazal are telling us it was the day, it was the longest day of the year, it was the sunniest day of the year. Like, minakatsa elakatsa. Okay, that was the sixth of the seven wonders of the world. Now we're up to wonder number seven. Wonder number seven is talking about Chizkiyo HaMelech, a story with Chizkiyo HaMelech that he got very sick. The Gemara Brachos talks about it. Chizkiyo HaMelech got very sick. And he asked the Navi, the Navi came to him and told him, why you're sick? Because you weren't, you didn't engage in the commandment of procreation. Because Chazal tell us that Chizkiyo HaMelech saw it, that he was destined to have a son who was very wicked, so he didn't want to get married and he didn't want to have children. So because of that, Chizkiyo didn't get married and have children, and Hashem is punishing him. He made him very sick and he was going to die. And then Chizkiyahu says, like, okay, is there any hope for me? So Yeshaya Hanavi says to him, look, you can marry my daughter, and maybe the schus of you and me together will produce a child that wasn't so wicked. And Kachava, Chizkiyahu Melech married the daughter of Yeshaya Hanavi. Does anyone know what her name was? Her name was Hefziba.
It says in the pasuk, "V'shem imay chavtzibah."
Right, and Lamaisa Chizkiyahu had a son named Menashe, who really was a wicked person. He was
the tshuva.
What?
Combined merits didn't.
So it didn't work, but the problem is.
Otherwise, maybe he wouldn't have done tshuva.
Maybe, but the point is that like Chizkiyahu was supposed to do what he's supposed to do, not make your own cheshbonis of like, oh, what I see in the future. Hashem says you're supposed to get married and have children. You're supposed to get married and have children. But that was the story. He was on his deathbed, and he did this, and he got healed, and he lived for a little bit longer afterwards. So Chazal tells us a story over here of what happened when Chizkiyahu was on his deathbed, and with that we're going to bring out the seventh wonder of the world. It says the Medrash, Maifes Shvi'i. The seventh wonder is like this: Miyem Shenivur Shemayim Ba'aretz. From the day that the heavens and the earth were created, Lo Haya Adam Chayle V'Yichya Mecholyoy. There was never a person who was sick, deathly ill, and he was healed from his sickness and was able to live afterwards. Shneimar says in the pasuk, "Bayamim ahem chalach Chizkiyahu lamus." During those days, Chizkiyahu became sick to die. It looked like he was going to die. There was no hope for him. And he would pray in front of Hashem, and he would say, "Ribbon kol olamim, Master of the universes." Ana Hashem, please Hashem, zecharno eitz asher salachti lefanecha, remember how I walked before you and I did all these good things, and please Hashem save me. Says the Medrash, v'netzer lei, and Hashem listened to his prayers. Shneimar, it says the pasuk, hinini yosef al yamecha chamesh esrei shana. Hashem, through the Navi of Yeshaya, said to Chizkiyahu Melech, behold, I'm going to add to your years, to your days, 15 years. And Chizkiyahu Melech lived another 15 years afterwards. So the seventh wonder of the world was somebody who was deathly ill and overcame the illness and was able to live. That's the seventh wonder of the world. Something that had never happened before Chizkiyahu HaMelech. The Mufarshim are bothered by, what do you mean? Chazal tell us other people became sick and were healed. Elisha, the Gemara says Elisha was sick three times and only in the last one did he die from his sickness. Right? Avia ben Yeravam was sick, and Yeravam sent his wife masqueraded to the Navi Achia Shileni to find out what's going to happen. Achazyahu, the son of Achav, he was sick, and he sent a message to Baal Zavuv, which is a Philistine of Avodah Zarah, and asked him if he's going to live. Baal Zavuv, Elihei Ekron. Right? So we find other people that were sick, and then you know they could survive afterwards. Right. So what are we saying over here? That only in the time of Chizkiyahu Melech was it this innovation that someone could become deathly sick and then survive. So the Marzu wants to say that in Achinami, by Elisha, he was sick and he got healed. But that didn't start a precedent that from then on that was the natural progression that people could become sick and get healed. That was like a yetzim in a klal. But when it happened to Chizkiyahu, then it was like from then on it could happen to anyone. That's what the Marzu wants to answer. The other answer, the Bayis HaGadol, you have the pirush on the bottom over there. So he wants to say that because the stories with Elisha are not necessarily explicitly in the pasuk, so the Medrash didn't want to mention it, as opposed to the story with Chizkiyahu Melech, which is more explicitly mentioned in the pasuk. So the Medrash focuses on that more. And the answer he says is because Chizkiyahu, the chiddush of Chizkiyahu was that he was able to get healed through prayer. Right, so because he was healed through prayer, so it's a new thing that you were able to get sick and then get healed through prayer. So that's like another new thing. But the Radal wants to say a different answer. The Radal is based on a thesis in Bava Basra. The Gemara Bava Basra says in the end of the first paragraph, Tazayin Mebeis, the Gemara says that Avram Avinu had a margolius achas ha'isa tuliyah betzavara. He had a precious gem that was hanging on his neck. And anyone who was sick could look at this precious gem that was hanging on the neck of Avram Avinu, and they would get healed. And the Gemara says that when Avram Avinu died, so Hashem hid it in the sun. And that's why the sun has certain healing properties. I think we've mentioned this before, I don't remember. But okay, so that's what the Gemara says. So it comes along Tesis in Bava Basra, and Tesis says, what do you mean? The Gemara says that until the time of Yaakov Avinu, nobody was getting sick. Yaakov Avinu davened to Hashem that he should get sick so that he'll know that before he dies, when he's going to die, so he can tell his children, he can give Musar to his children and give them bracha. But before Yaakov Avinu, no one was getting sick. So what does it mean that in the time of Avram, if you were sick, you could look at this thing. There was no such thing as getting sick. That's Tezis' kasha. So Tezis has two answers. One answer is that this that we say that before Yaakov Avinu, no one was getting sick, that's not talking about what he calls a choli machmas maka, a sickness that comes through a wound. Let's say I came and I take a sledgehammer and I smash your kneecaps. Yeah? So you're not going to be, before Yaakov Avinu, you wouldn't end up in the hospital because people didn't get sick before Yaakov Avinu. Of course they did. That's called choli machmas maka. When we say that by the time of Yaakov Avinu was nischadish idea of getting sick, that means like more, let's say, I'm looking for a word over here. A sickness that's not coming through like a physical wound. Something that's more, less obvious. Maybe germs, bacterial infections, viruses, something like
internal
that.
Internal ailments?
Internal ailments, maybe.
As opposed to Tanya Harding ailments.
Tanya Harding?
You said bash the kneecaps. That's Tanya Harding.
Oh, man. I remember that.
Bash Nancy Kerrigan in the kneecaps. You remember this.
What was that? Olympics? Nice, that was 1996 Olympics?
Whatever, yeah.
Something nice like
skater.
That.
Nice skater?
We're old. He doesn't know what you're talking about.
That was born,
the second answer Tesis says...
Born.
No, he wasn't. The second answer Tesis answers that... No, the time of Yaakov Avinu... People could get sick... But they wouldn't necessarily die from the sickness. And then from Yaakov and onwards, they would necessarily die from the sickness. You could get sick that as a sign that he's going
to
die.
I thought it was the first just to get sick.
No, so that's what Tesis is saying. Tesis is saying that now he's the first one injury. Only to get sick that he was going to die.
Okay.
So based on that, the Radal wants to answer our question. We said that Chizkiyahu was the first person to get sick and get healed. Right? So he says, we find other people got sick and got healed. So the Radal has to say that, first of all, the first types of Tesis. Maybe only those people got sick and got healed. It was only a type of sickness that came through a wound. It wasn't an internal ailment, like you said. Or you could say that when we say that Chizkiyahu was the first person to get sick and to get healed, it means that the first person to get sick and be about to die and then get healed. And other people, they got sick, but they weren't about to die and then get healed. That's different truths than that the Radal says. Weiter. Omer Chizkiyahu lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu. Chizkiyahu said in front of Hashem, Ribbon Kol Olamim, Master of the Universes, Tain Li Ois, give me a sign. The Navi came and said that he's going to live for another 15 years. So Chizkiyahu turns around and says to the Navi, give me a sign, give me proof. How do I know it's true? Shara says, the Pasuk V'yamei Chizkiyahu said, Ma Ois Ki El LeBeis Hashem, what's the sign that I'm going to go up to the house of Hashem? How do I know I'm going to survive this illness? The Navi tells me it's true, but give me a sign. That's a little bit something missing over here, right? Give me a sign. What do you mean, give me a sign? The Navi says it. You believe the Navi. You have to believe a Navi. Right? It's a mitzvah to believe a Navi. If you do not deny what the Navi says, it's a big avera. So how could you say, give me a sign? What's this, give me a sign over here? So Beliyomi Yisrael says like this. He brings two things. One is the Barbanel. It's evident from the Barbanel over there. By this story, the Barbanel says that the sign wasn't... Chizkiyahu didn't want the sign for himself. Chizkiyahu wanted the sign for other people. That Hashem is going to do something that will make it evident that Hashem is the one who's intervening in here. It wasn't that he naturally became healed from his sickness. That's the Barbanel's pshat. Rabbi Yomi Yisrael says his own pshat. He says that he's not asking for a sign that he's going to be healed. That wasn't what was bothering him. He's asking for a sign that his tshuva was accepted. Meaning, there's two people. There's two types of people in the world. There's what we call, Gemara says, a tzaddik gamar, a completely righteous person who never did any averas. And then there's someone called a bal tshuva, a person who did averas, and he repented his averas, and now he's holding on the same darga as a tzaddik, similar darga as a tzaddik gamar, that he doesn't have any averas, let's say, in his background, in his record. right? But if you dig deep, he technically does have affairs, right? So Chizkiyahu Melech wanted to know this, that I didn't engage in procreation, and now I got married, and I'm doing what you want me to do, and I'm gonna live because I did what you want me to do. Is that considered as if I never went against what you want me to do? Or is it considered as if I did go against what you want me to do, but I did tshuva? Am I considered a tzaddik gamor, or am I considered a bal tshuva? That's what Chizkiyahu HaMelech wanted to know. So Rabbi Leo Meizr says that this, that Hashem would make a special sign for somebody, a special nace, just to show him, that would only be in the case of a person who's a tzaddik gamor. If he's a bal tshuva, Hashem wouldn't make a nace. Even though he's holding on that level, there's a difference between the tzaddik gamor and a bal tshuva in that way. Hashem won't make a special nace for him. So Chizkiyahu wanted to see, is Hashem going to make a special nace, a special sign to show me that my tshuva was accepted and make it as if I never did anything wrong? Or is it there's something on my record and Hashem is like overlooking it? Okay, so what happens? Amaloi, so I guess this is Yeshaya Hanavi speaking to him. He says, Ochaz Avicha, your father Ochaz, Kovish b'mazolis hayah. He would capture the mazolis, or the girsa of the Bais HaGadol is kibed b'mazolis. He would honor the mazolis. Achaz, Chizkiyahu's father Achaz, was a big idolater. He was oivid of a desire, and he worshipped everything. He would worship the mazolis, or he would be mechabed the mazolis. Different girsa. V'ayimishtachave l'shemesh v'le'reach v'le'kachovim v'le'mazolis, and he would bow to the sun, the moon, the stars, the constellations. What happened? Ubarach mipanav Hashemesh. The sun ran away from Achaz when he went to bow down to it. V'yored b'mayrav eser malos, and it went down into the west 10 degrees. I don't know exactly what that means, but it means that the sun was sort of 10 degrees off kilter from where it would normally be expected, because as sort of like a punishment for Achaz worshiping Avodah Zarah. Grada Rashi in Sefer Yeshaya says a little bit differently. Rashi in Sefer Yeshaya says that on the day that Achaz died, Hashem made a nace that the sun went down very quickly so that they won't be able to give a hespedim on Achaz. So
hespedim, every person turns into a saint.
Yeah.
So the worst murderer, oh, he is such a good person. He's good hearted.
Yeah. So what happens? So Yeshaya says, "Imroi ta'ato oy yered eser milus." So Yeshaya said, "Look, because of your father Achaz, the sun is 10 degrees off kilter. So if you want, make a special sign that it'll go another 10 degrees off kilter." Omer lefanav. So Chizkiyahu said in front of Hashem, "Ribon kolam, master of the universe, says, Loichi, no, this that's not what I want. Elo oisin eser hamilus sheyored yachsav yamad bimkemei." Rather, what I want is not to go further than Achaz, but to rectify what happened because of Achaz. It went 10 degrees off kilter. I wanted to go back those 10 degrees that it went off and be in its proper place. Shenemar loy ki yoshuv atzel achayranis eser milos. No, I want the sun, the shade to go back 10 degrees. I want it to go back 10 degrees, to return to the way it was supposed to be before Achaz came along. And that's what happened. Chizkiyahu HaMelech got healed, the sun went back, and everything is hunky-dory, right? So Chazal tell us that what happened afterwards is that when people found out that Chizkiyahu was very ill and he got healed, so the kings of the world were very impressed with this, and they sent a letter to Chizkiyahu, like a get-well letter, get-well card from the kings of Babylon and whatever, saying like, oh, I hope everything is beseder with you, right? Meruduch Baladan, who is the king of Bavel, he sent a special letter to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. V'ro'u kol malchei ha'aretz v'samu. All the kings of the land saw what?
The sun?
Says the Marzun. Not that they saw the sun, like Rabbi Pomerantz was about to say, because then that would be the eighth wonder.
Yeah.
What it means is that they saw that Chizkiyahu was very sick and he got healed. V'somhu, and they wondered about it. Shelo yihaya kamayo miyem shenivra olam. There was never such a thing since the day that the world was created. V'shalchu lireis es hamayfis, and they sent messengers to Eretz Yisrael to see, to check it out, to see for themselves. Shnemar, it says the pasuk v'chein b'mlitz esarei Bavel. These officers of Bavel from Babylon, which was then considered a faraway country, came and they saw the situation over there in Eretz Yisrael.
What did they see?
They saw that Chizkiyahu was, I guess, before he was
sick.
He was sick and now he's healed.
And then they sent them and they saw a healed king. They're going to believe that he was sick?
I don't know. Yeah, it's a good question. What exactly did they see? But now the Medrash goes off and says an interesting thing. Chizkiyahu saw the messengers of the king of Bavel. And he became very haughty. What does it mean he became haughty? He wanted to sort of show off to them. The Radal has a very interesting idea that the Midah of Bavel is that they're big Bal Gaiva. And because Chizkiyahu was like showing them around and he became close to them in certain ways, and Tanud of Eliyahu even says that he even ate with them. And you eat with a meal with somebody, so what do they say? Breaking bread together brings hearts closer. What's the expression? Something like that. So then he became like them, and he also became some infinitesimal degree of gaiva. And what did he do? The Herolahem as Eitzres Shel Malchei Yehuda. He showed them. He wanted to show off to them. He showed them the treasures of the royal the Judean kings. There's Kol Eitzres Beis Kachay Hakadoshim and the storage houses of the Beis Kodesh Hakadoshim of the Beis Hamikdash. Va'oid, and furthermore, Shaposach Es Ha'Oroin. He opened the Oron. Ve'her Elohem Es Haluchis, and he showed them the Luchis. Va'amar, he said to them, Bazeh Anu Eisin Melchama V'Neitzchin. With this, we do war and we are victorious. Shenamar says the buzz of Yisbach Aleim Chizkiyahu Vayarem is based on Chayisa. So that's what Chizkiyahu Melech did. He wanted to show off to them. He showed them everything. The pasuk doesn't say he showed them all these things, the Kodesh Hakodoshim and the Beis Hamikdash. The last pasuk is Loi Haya Dovar Asher Loi Heram Chizkiyahu. There wasn't anything that he didn't show them. Everything was on the table. He showed them everything. Rabbi Felder asked the question. How did he open the Oren to show them the Luchas? The Oren is inside the Kodesh HaGadoshim. Chas l'shalom to say the Chizkiyahu Melech brought them into the Beis HaMikdash, into the Kodesh HaGadoshim, and then he opened the Oren and showed it to them. Chas l'shalom to say,
right?
He wasn't going to, we're criticizing him, but we're not saying that he did mamish something that's mamish Yisr Karish.
He wanted to come out of it alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
When the Beis HaMikdash was around, everybody entered in.
So the Radal asks the question. The Radal says that Chazal tell us that there's certain places in the Beis HaMikdash that like it's mechuvan, it's connect, it corresponds, juxtaposed to the place of the Kodesh HaGadoshim, and you can like look in a certain pishpishin, certain like corners or certain holes or whatever, and you can see straight through it into the Kodesh HaGadoshim.
But a boy can't go past the hill though.
Yeah. So I guess somehow through those pishpishin you could see.
Or even outside of the hill.
Maybe the reshus of the king.
But the question is bigger. It says in the Medrash that he opened the Oren and showed them the Luchas. Who opened the Oren? Who went in the Kodesh HaGadoshim and opened the Oren? The only person who's going to Kodesh HaGadoshim is the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur. So
does he open the Oren when he goes in?
No, he does not open the Oren when he goes in.
So nobody ever sees it?
No one ever does that. So I was thinking, maybe in Achinami, maybe it was he did this Dafka on Yom Kippur, and Dafka when the Kohen Gadol went in, so he asked the Kohen Gadol to like open it, but it's still like it's a doichik. Or you could say that he went in Derech Gagin, or Shalei Kedarka. If you go you come into the Kodesh HaGadoshim, not through the entrance, but like you come in through the roof, and like you jump down inside. So maybe it could, even though that could be his ulcer, but it's not an Isser Karis.
Well, they say that to fix the
to fix it, right? They would send people from above.
Ropes and stuff like
right.
That.
So maybe that's what he did. That's not called going in for no reason. I'm not sure.
A rabbi once made a point. He said, "Who's the only one who gets to go in?"
Yeah,
Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Gadol and
yeah,
the people who clean in there. the nobodies.
Right.
They have to go in and clean. The janitors get to go in.
The Spanish people can go in there.
Yeah, that's what's the point.
That's amigo.
So I don't, that doesn't answer our question, but you see that there is such a concept of the who's closer to the king. The Tsar, the great Tsar, or the Evid?
Right.
The Evid, you know, I that doesn't answer the question here, but I'm just making the point.
The sweeper.
There's a different, there are different ways to get
the chimney sweeper.
Yeah. Dick Van Dyke. The chimney sweeper. What movie?
Mary Poppins.
Chim-chimmery.
You don't know these things.
Oh, neither do I.
Yeah, right. The other thing is like this. Oh, so the Radha wants to answer that maybe Chazal tell us that there were really two luchos. Two arons, sorry. And two luchos. There were two luchos too. But there were two arons as well. Right? There was the Aron, Chazal tells us, there was the Aron that they used to take out with them for war. And that would be in the front of the army with the Aron. And that would have the old luchos, the first set of luchos, the broken ones. And then there was the other Aron, which was inside the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, or whatever.
Rashi,
right? And that's Rashi where the second luchos were. Yeah, Rashi and Chumash is coming from Chazal. Right? So based on that, the Radhans said that maybe what happened was that he didn't show them the Aron that was in the Beis HaMikdash. He showed them the other Aron, the one that they used to use for war. But the problem is that it's mevor in sources that was only in the time of Yeshua when they were fighting with the Aron, when they were conquering Eretz Yisrael originally. But after the time, once it was already a Beis HaMikdash, there weren't two Arons. There was only one Aron, and both the Luchos and the Shivri Luchos were sitting together in the Aron that was in the Beis HaMikdash. So it's,
they're still there now, they're underneath our eyes.
Yeah, Chazal tell us that we'll speak about it in a few minutes.
Rama mentions it.
That Yoshio HaMelech, the Gemara in Yoma says that Yoshio HaMelech hid the Aron.
Maybe going to find the Aron.
Maybe?
He's going to bring it to Avi.
They know where the Aron is, no? It's the whole story in All for the Boss.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
that's just the Kalim.
Just the Kalim?
A tour guide once told me when we were underground there, there's this big stone on a big pit. You can kind of tell there's a pit there, and there's this massive stone that really couldn't fit in the hallway that's there. So he's religious, and he says, I mean, to me, I think underneath this giant stone in this pit is the Aron, and it's right underneath the temple somewhere.
But they actually,
and they asked him, why can't you just get in there to have this done? He says, because that would make a massive international incident.
Well, in 1981, they almost got there. In Begin's time, they were digging, and they saw from afar, I think. And then they started a whole, the tikshorot came, the evil people of the left wing tikshorot came, and they started, videotaping and sending it throughout the world. And there's a whole commotion, so they can, you know.
You mean, All for the Boss, the calculation from when it said should have been 1990.
What?
Because in All for the Boss, it said 28 years. 28 years from when that was written was 1990.
Let me know what you're talking about.
All for the Boss, the book. Right? The book.
Yeah.
He writes that this guy said.
He found it in his field.
He found it in his field.
He was
right?
Digging or whatever in his
it's
field.
Not the
farming, and he found him.
Right.
He found the Kalim and he didn't know what it was, and he took it to the All for the Boss guy, Herman.
Yeah, right.
Herman took it to Chofetz, sent a Igeris to the Chofetz Chaim. And now?
But the Chofetz Chaim died in 1933.
Yeah, this is before that.
So it couldn't have been before that because it said something in the book, All for the Boss, for 28 years.
28 years what?
28 years, it was going to be revealed in 28 years. It was 28 years after
the
date in the Wolf of the Boss, and that came out to 1990. Which in 1990, the Lubavitcher Rebbe said a year of miracles. But unfortunately,
I don't remember this 28 years in Wolf of the Boss.
Oh, I remember this 1990 year of miracles we spoke about in Perek Chof Ches.
What about the Gulf War? In
1990.
We made a whole cheshbon with our Barbanel
and whatever. Was Operation Desert Storm. And 91 was the Gulf War.
Okay, let's try to finish off the parak and then.
No, the Operation Desert Storm was the beginning of the war.
You have to show me because I'm not for the war.
The beginning, they didn't know it was going to be a war. They thought it was going to be a military operation.
Yeah.
So later on, it spiraled into a war.
What was going to be in 28 years?
So the question is like this: What was Chizkiyahu HaMelech thinking? Why did he show them all these treasures of the Beis HaMikdash? What was he thinking? Why did he want to do such a thing? Give away all the state secrets. So Rabbi Yom Isra says that the pshat is that Chizkiyahu HaMelech thought that if he shows them the glory of the Beis Hashem, of the Beis HaMikdash, all these things, maybe it'll bring them to tshuva and they'll come to recognize Hashem. But as we're going to see later on, it's evident that no, it was a taina against Chizkiyahu. He shouldn't have done this, and he's going to get punished for it. And he should have realized that no, if they're not in a spall, they're not moved by the fact that Chizkiyahu was deathly ill and he got healed, and Chizkiyahu moved the sun back into place or whatever. If that didn't move them and get them to stop believing in their Avodah Zarah, nothing will. And there's no point in showing them all the holy things in the Beis Hamikdash. One point. The second point is that the Shlach says that if a goy looks at the wine of a Jew, that makes it into Yayin Nesach. This is a halacha that they're even makbid on this in Herzog wineries, that one of the hechsherim that they give, the makbid on this halacha. It's also brought in Kav Yashar and others farm
the yain or any part of the process, even the grapes.
I'm not sure exactly at what point. That's why they have like tinted glass, because the makbid on this. Rabbi Weinberg is one of the people who gives the hechsher. He's makbid on this.
It's all mavushal, isn't it?
It's not all mavushal, oh. And whatever, but it's also flash pasteurization, which could be some people don't hold of. Okay. Whatever.
We have non-mavushal wine. My wife always wraps it in aluminum foil.
Yeah.
Just in case someone knows shum.
So based on that shlop, Rabbi Yomi Israel wants the same idea that if a guy looks at a guy's eyes can defile something that's holy. A Jew's wine is holy, and if a guy looks at it, he defiles it. So he says, like, there was a taina, there was a complaint against Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He showed these Goyisha emissaries all the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash and the luchas and everything, because just them looking at it sort of defiles them.
Dafka goy is over the Avodah Zarah or every goy?
I don't know.
People hold that even a Jew who's not Shomer Shabbos can do it. Because we've had guests here who are all Jewish, and so we were unsure as to whether they were all Shomer Shabbos or not. Non-religious people were trying to carve, and we kept the wine like wrapped up in aluminum foil or in a paper bag.
You don't have mavushal?
If we don't have it, we try to get mavushal generally, but if we had non-mavushal wine, we would just be a little careful, that's all.
See pictures of the forbiddens like a brown bag.
All right, let's go back to it.
Yeah.
Because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem got angry at Chizkiyahu v'omer lo, and he said to him, Lo'idayecha she'ereisu lehem b'skol oitzves b'es kot she'akadoshim. It's not enough that you show them all the storage houses of the Beis Hamikdash, v'skol oitzves Malchi Yehuda, and all the storage houses of the kings of Yehuda. Here it says Kadosh Kadoshim before Malchi Yehuda, before it said Malchi Yehuda before Kadosh Kadoshim. Interesting. But you also opened for them the luchas, my handiwork. Chayecha, I swear to you that hem yalu yichu as kol oitzres malchi Yehuda as kol oitzres beis kotzei hakadoshim. I swear to you that they're going to come up and they're going to take all the storage houses, all the treasures of the royal house of Yehuda and the storage houses of the Beis Hamikdash. Shneimar, it says in the pasuk, hine yomim boim v'nisa kol asher bebeisecha. Behold, the days are coming and everything that's in your house will be carried off. V'sachas haluchos, and instead of the luchos, and as punishment, retribution for showing them the luchos, yikhu mibonecha sarisim chal melech bavel. Your descendants, Chizkiyahu, your descendants will be taken as eunuchs, which means like officers, but it also means eunuchs, in the sanctuary of the king of Bavel. Shenamar says, apostolic umibonecha asher yetzei mimcha. And your children which will come out from you will be taken as captives in Bavel. Ve'eluhain, and these are those descendants of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Daniel, Chananya, Mishael, V'Azariah. These four people who are characters in the Sefer Daniel, who are all descendants of Chizkiyahu HaMelech Yehuda, and they ended up in the court of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel. Shenasu Sarisim Behichal HaMelech Bavel. They became officers in the house of the king, in the palace of the king of Bavel, but officers also means eunuchs. V'loi halidu banim. And they didn't have children because they were castrated. And about these people, to the sarisim, to those eunuchs who keep Shabbos, that even though you don't have children, I'm going to give you a remembrance, a remembrance for all time. That's even better than having children. You're going to be remembered, which Chazal tells means you're going to be recorded in the book of Daniel. You're going to be mentioned, you're going to be brought down in the book of Daniel. It's going to be canonized, it's going to be part of Tanakh, your stories, and that's a better remembrance than anything else.
That's
Haftorah
for
the Tinus. Well, yeah, that's Haftorah for the Tinus, that's right. This pasuk in Yeshaya is Haftorah for the Tinus. The Mepharshim point out an interesting thing over here. The Gemara in Yoma has the machlekes. What happened to the Arun of the Beis HaMikdash? It's machlekes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer says the Arun was also exiled to Bavel with the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi Yeshua says no, the Arun was hidden in its place near the Beis HaMikdash. So as we were talking about before. Now, our Medrash says that Tachas haluchos, because you showed them the luchos, your children will be taken as captives or whatever. We should have said better. We said, because you showed them the luchos, the Aron and the luchos will be taken as captives. Why did we focus on the children and not on the Aron and the luchos themselves? So the Radal over here wants to say that our Medrash goes like Rabbi Shua, not like Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Shua says that the Aron was hidden in its place. So the Aron was hidden in its place. And therefore the Medrash doesn't focus on the Aron being captive because the Aron was hidden in its place, right? Masha'enke and Rabbi Eliezer, well, the Aron was also brought into Golus, so Rabbi Eliezer himself would hold that the Aron is going into Golus is also a punishment for Chizkiyahu. Now the problem is, as Rabbi Pomerantz points out, we're learning Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, and you would assume that Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer would go like the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, right? So the Radal's like, no, we're going like Rabbi Yeshua over here. So the Marzu answers the question, and he says that no, the point of the Medrash is that because you show them the Luchos, so he's saying like, add this in parentheses, even though it's not written explicitly in the Medrash. Not only is the Aron and the Luchos going to be captured by the people of Bavel, but also your descendants will be captured by them. I mean, we're saying not only, but also your descendants. Not just your descendants, and that the Aron is Nignas Bim Kaimir. No, the Aron is also going to be into Golos, but the Chiddush is that also your descendants will be brought into Golos.
According to this, the Aron is in Bavel now?
I didn't say that. So I said, according to this, the Aron was brought to Bavel.
It was?
No, who said that? Who said back? No? Nobody says that.
No? I just assumed.
No, it's not brought it back. No, it wasn't. He didn't.
We just know that the Aron was brought into Golos. We don't know what happened to it afterwards.
Say that the Romans had it, now it's in the Catholic place.
The Vatican? Yeah, people say that.
Yeah, it says before, Shabbai Sheni, the Kohen Gadol wanted to do the Avoda, he didn't have the Aron, so he had to do certain things on the Eben HaShisi itself. Because the Aron wasn't there, it was naked.
In Indiana Jones, it's in Area 51. America.
Okay, now, so
you're right.
Yeah.
It's a George place.
Yeah.
It's what's it called? In Roswell, New Mexico, yeah.
Area 51, in like wherever, in Nevada, wherever.
The Bermuda Triangle.
Maybe you're hiding in your den.
The Bermuda Triangle is in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, that's where they would hide it, no?
Maybe hiding the Aron.
I only saw the end of the movie.
The Bilderberg Group, they know where it is.
Who?
The Bilderberg Group and the Illuminati. Yeah, I know all these stupid, crazy conspiracy theorists. And Barry Chamish, he just died recently.
Yeah, Barry Chamish just died. My share looks pretty
high. Okay, so...
He died?
He died a few months ago.
Both dynamics.
Uh-oh. Anyways, like this. Okay, we have...
You guys know about Barry Chamish.
I don't know.
His conspiracy. I think just one point about Barry Chamish. His conspiracy theory about the death of Yitzhak Rabin is so accepted in this country. Yeah. Like everyone just assumes, yeah, that's what happened. The Mossad, of course, the Mossad killed him. It's like a wild theory that's like very accepted. He has other crazy theories.
So wild. I mean, how can you get lost?
See? You see?
How can you get lost in Tel Aviv? A 5-year-old kid knows how to get to Echol Hospital, but all the security guards got lost on the way to the hospital.
I mean, as opposed to Barry Chamish's other theories, which like nobody takes seriously, except for your father-in-law.
What? The theory that the Shabab killed him.
He has all kinds of crazy. I don't remember all of them.
This theory, I think, is actually
Titanic
true.
About aliens and. Okay, we just have a few minutes. I just want to. Rabbi Leome Isber goes through the seven wonders. We'll give a sikum, a summary of the seven wonders. Explain how they're each one is. Mida keneged mida of the person that got that miracle, and then try to come up with more general guidelines of like what's in the list and what doesn't make the cut to this list. Okay, last week we said two criteria for the list. One is that it was something that never happened before, even though it could happen afterwards, and it was something that everyone knew about. Right, so we'll see. Rabbi Yomi Isber might have add some more things to the list of what makes the list of the seven wonders. Okay, well, now make the sikkum. The first wonder of the world was that Avraham Avinu was thrown into a fiery furnace and he survived. So why is the mida connected mida? Because Avraham Avinu was a maimon in the Kodesh Baruch Hu. He put all his belief in Hashem. And when you believe in Hashem, you believe that Hashem can transcend all the elements of nature. And Hashem is called Hashem, he's called like a burning fire. And if you believe in Hashem, you can even transcend the ability of fire to burn you. And that's why Avraham Avinu was saved from a fiery furnace. The second wonder was that Sarah Imenu was able to have children even at an advanced age. The nature is that once you get to a certain age, a woman can't have children anymore. Sarah was able to have it. What's the Mida Kenegan Mida? So Rabbi Leo Mizmer says, because Chazal tell us that Avraham Avinu was Megayer men, and Sarah Imenu was Megayer women. Right? And how are you Megayer people? How do you bring them close to Hashem, close to Yiddishkeit, close to your family? You host them as guests. Now, Gemara Bava Metzia Pezayin Amar Aleph says that the nature of women is that they're stingy when it comes to guests. They don't want to serve them the best food, they don't want to serve them too much, etc. But Sarah Imenu, she was so matzliach, in the kiruv that she did, that it's evident that she obviously wasn't stingy with the guests, and she was very generous with them. She was able to overcome that natural tendency of women to be stingy with the guests, and be able to give. So because of that, Hashem overcame the natural block that a woman who gets to a certain age can't have children, and allowed her to have children even at an advanced age. The third wonder is that nobody had exterior signs of aging until Avraham Avinu became old, got his white beard, right, to differentiate between Avraham and Yitzchak. Last week I was trying to come up with a word. I called it oldness. It wasn't so eloquent. I was thinking about it this week. I called it gentrification. That's a fancy way of saying they became old. Now, Avraham Avinu was the first one to become old. Why? What's the idea? We said last week that the idea was that his hair turned white. What's the idea? So Avraham Avinu's whole mission in life was to show the glory of Hashem, to show the covet of Hashem. So Hashem repaid him, Mida Keneged Mida, that Avraham Avinu's hair turned white, and that was like we said last week, that the white hair is like a crown on a person. It shows his glory, it brings out his glory. So Avraham Avinu Hashem brought out Avraham Avinu's glory. The fourth wonder was Yaakov Avinu, that nobody became sick and was able to survive until Yaakov Avinu.
No.
Yeah.
Sick and
died. Oh, sorry. No one was able to. No one became sick before they died until Yaakov Avinu. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu, his whole life, he spent trying to mitos hashlema. His bed is complete. He was trying to work on his children to make sure that all his children are going to be included in Klal Yisrael, not like Avram who had Yishmael, not like Yitzhak who had Esav. Yaakov Avinu worked to make sure that all his children are going to be, you know, up to par. Now, it would be a pity that if Yaakov Avinu spent his whole life working on that, at the end of his life, he wouldn't be able to give them the mussar that they need, or to give them the brachas that they need in order to continue. Right? So Hashem helped him out, Mida Keneged Mida, what his mission was, Hashem helped him out, and allowed it that he would be able to know right before he's going to die, by getting sick. That was the third wonder. That was the fourth wonder. The fifth wonder is Bnei Yisrael crossing the Red Sea, which he says the point of Bnei Yisrael leaving Egypt was in order to be mekabel the Torah, and the Torah is comparable to water, right? Chazal tells us that just like a fish without water can't survive, so Klal Yisrael without water also can't survive. So water is like the Torah of Klal Yisrael. So Klal Yisrael was going for the water, so Hashem split the water. The sixth wonder is the story with Yeshua making the sun stand still. So what's the connection between Yeshua and the sun? So the idea is that Chazal tell us that v'zorach hashemesh u'bo hashemesh. It's a pasuk in Kehelas. When the sun goes down, the sun shines and the sun leaves. It's a whole system. As the sun is coming up, it's also working on coming back. As it's going down, it's also working on coming back up. So Chazal interpret that to the progression of generations. Just as one gadol, one leader of Klal Yisrael is dying, the next one is already shining up. Just when Moshe Rabbeinu was dying, Yeshua was already being appointed as the next leader. V'tzavis Yeshua v'chazkeu v'ametzeu. That's Lashon HaPasuk. So Yeshua was already becoming king on the day that Moshe Rabbeinu died. Right? So that the pasuk that's talking about this idea is v'zrach Hashemesh u'bar Shemesh. It's talking about the Shemesh. We say that Chazal tells that Moshe Rabbeinu was like the sun, Yeshua was like the moon. So he was comparable to the moon because he accepted his light from the sun. He was just a continuation of Moshe Rabbeinu. So that bittul of Yeshua, where he was like the moon that wanted to be like the sun, so Hashem gave him power over the sun. He was able to make the sun stand still. The seventh wonder of the world is the story of Chizkiyahu Melech becoming deathly ill and overcoming that. So what's the significance of that? So it says because Chizkiyahu, in the time of Chizkiyahu Melech, Bnei Yisrael was sick. They were sick. What do I mean by sick? I don't mean they were physically ill. I mean they were doing disgusting things. They were doing avodah zarah. From the influence of Chizkiyahu's father, Achaz, they became involved in avodah zarah. And what did Chizkiyahu Melech do? He made a religious renaissance in Klal Yisrael. He went around, he got rid of all the avodah zarah, he got people to learn Torah again, and he brought them to closer to Limud Torah, and he remedied the situation. He healed them. Yeah, he healed them from that sickness. So because he healed Bnei Yisrael from that sickness, so Hashem healed him from his sickness. Right? And in fact, Chizkiyahu Melech, he exerted much effort. Chazal tell us that he wanted to bring people closer to Hashem. One of the things was that there was a sefer called the Book of Remedies, Sefer Refuas. And one of the things that Chizkiyahu Melech did was he hid the Book of Remedies. Because people would otherwise be able to take the Book of Remedies and do different potions and create other types of medicines that would be able to heal things that they didn't put their trust in Hashem. So Chizkiyahu Melech hid that. So because he tried to bring people closer to Hashem, especially in the realm of sicknesses and medicine, so Hashem healed him in that way. And then Rabbi Leo Izmir asks the question over here. He says, what do you mean? If there was the Book of Refuahs, so that tells you that people were getting sick and dying, right? Or people were getting sick and they could get healed. So people could get sick and get healed. What was the Chiddush of Chizkiyahu? And he brings the same thesis in Bava Basra that the Radal brought with the two truths of illness from a wound. That before Chizkiyahu, they were only getting illness from a wound, not internal elements. Or the other teretz was that people weren't dying from it. They were just getting sick, but they weren't necessarily dying. Then Rabbi Leomi Izmir asked a few questions. Says, what about other miracles? That's, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu. He made the waters of Marah sweet by throwing I know it's a random one, right? By throwing a tree into the water, he made it sweet. So why don't we mention that miracle? Why don't we mention Elio and Elisha, who were able to resurrect the dead? Right? So he says that those miracles weren't as well known. Sort of like what the Radal said, that the part of the criteria to be listed is that it has to be a miracle that's well known in the world. But then he says, but we had other miracles that are well known. For example, the Jews in the Midbar, they had man. And everyone knew about the man. Although the Gemara in Yoma, Ayin Vav Amar Aleph says that the man would come up. If all the kings of the east and the west, they saw the man coming down for the Jews. So everyone knew about it. So why is the man not mentioned over here? So he says like this. He says that all the miracles that we're talking about over here in our parak, the seven wonders, are only talking about miracles that happened as the result of a tzaddik requesting them. Yaakov Avinu wanted that he could be able to give his will to his children, so he asked that he should get sick. You know, Yeshua asked that the son be still. Chizkiyahu Melech asked that he be healed. Right? All these people, it was a tzaddik asked something, Hashem gave into it, and it was a big chiddush. So that's why it's listed. These other things, it wasn't that Hashem that they asked for it. Okay, a bit schwer because. What they didn't ask for, they asked for the water to be sweetened, no, and they asked.
Well, they didn't ask.
Okay, by Elisha, what's it called? The Isha Shunamis, she asked Elisha to heal her kid, no. So I'm not sure exactly how it works. And then he says that Masha'enkin, what's it by the mon? His extra question was the mon. So he says, well, the mon, you could say. I know. Sorry, I'm getting confused. Those things. Elisha and Elio doing resurrection of the dead and fixing the water, so that he already answered. He said that those things weren't so famous. It wasn't so inspiring. His question now is about the mon. So to answer the question of the mon, he says that they didn't ask for mon. That's what he says. They didn't ask for mon. What do you mean they didn't ask for mon? So he says because when they came out of Mitzrayim, they thought, you know, they brought their matzahs with them or whatever, and they thought they were going to go straight into Eretz Yisrael, and they wouldn't need any food. So they never thought to ask for mon. And then the mon came because it ended up that they didn't end up going into Eretz Yisrael straight away. So, but they didn't. It wasn't a result of them asking for it. Then he asks another series of questions. He says, what about Daniel? Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, and it says the puzzle that he asked Hashem to save him. Or Cain. Cain, after he killed Hevel, so Hashem is going to punish him, and Cain said to Hashem, give me some protection. You know, I need some protection. And it says Hashem gave him a special sign, Vayitan Hashem Cain Ois, which we spoke about in Parak Chaf Aleph. Yeah, we spoke about what exactly was the sign. It was the letter Aleph or Test or Vav or whatever. Right? But so Hashem gave him a special sign. So what about those things that are special miracles that Hashem did and was as a result of a tzaddik, or not necessarily a tzaddik, but somebody asking for it? And then he asked, what about Yonah? Yonah was swallowed up by a big fish, and it never happened to anybody else in the world that was they were swallowed up by a big fish and they were able to survive. Right?
There he asked to leave.
So Rabbi Leo Meizra says another criteria in what goes in the list of the seven wonders.
That wasn't well known though by Jonah.
Jonah? Well, maybe. Not sure. You could answer that probably, that it wasn't well known. But so Rabbi Leo Meizra adds another criteria. It has to be something that it was something that never happened before, and now it was a novel miracle, and then from then on it was something that happened afterwards. It has to be something that also happened afterwards. So we never found anyone else who was saved from a lion's den. We never find anyone else who got a special sign from Hashem. We never find anyone else who was swallowed up by a big fish and survived. So there, it didn't happen.
Masha Enkin.
Oh, I'll take it. Masha Enkin. When we're talking about ours, when we're talking about
the seven,
Yeshua split.
Well, I'll tell you. When we're talking about the seven ones that happened over here, another. The seven wonders actually happened in our Midrash. So he says that they did happen. For example, Avraham Avinu was saved from a fiery furnace, and not only was he saved from a fiery furnace, but Yeshua ben Yehoshadak Kohen Gadol was saved from a fiery furnace, we spoke about in Perek Lamed Gimel, and Hanan Mishael Azariah was saved from a fiery furnace, right? Sarah was able to give birth at an advanced age, and then also Yocheved, right? She was 130 according to Chazal. And Hannah was also, she wasn't able to give birth, and she was able to give birth afterwards. And then, of course, the ability to that somebody would get old, or people getting sick before they die, or people getting sick and getting healed. You know, Maisim B'chol Yoyim, those things happen every day. Kriyas Yamsuf, right? So Kriyas Yamsuf was something that happened once, but also happened, the Jews crossed the Jordan. The Gemara says Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer also crossed the river. Right? He was able to make the river split. What about the sun standing still? So we said that Yeshua made the sun stand still. We said also in the time of Chizkiyahu and in the time of Achaz, Hashem was playing around with the movement of the sun. And the Gemara says as well that Naktiman ben Gurion was also able to make the sun stand still. Mashaikin, by Yoyna, by Daniel, all those nisim they weren't repeated, so they're not listed in our seven wonders. And he also uses this to answer another question that, okay, whatever, yeah. One last point he says is that some of the miracles that we're talking about have to do with not such nice things. So because they have to do with not nice things, that they came into the world through someone like doing an avera or something like that, so we also didn't want to mention those wonders. For example, let's say the mon, so like people complained about the mon, the water. The people complained that the water was bitter, so Hashem gave them a punishment. It's not a punishment, but like there was a taina on Klal Yisrael for complaining. So like we didn't want to speak about that story. Or the story with Yonah. Yonah was only swallowed by a fish because he did something wrong. He didn't give over his nevuah, so it was like a punishment. So we don't want to say like a punishment that happened. Or the story of Cain. Cain killed Hevel, and that's why he needs special protection. So we didn't want to speak about those things. Okay, that's more or less the vort of Rabbi Leo Meizmir in a nutshell. Go ahead.